I thought I heard a sound. Podcast.
One sec, I'm getting another call. Hello?
Hi, may I speak with John?
Yeah, this is him.
Hi, this is Kyle with your student loan service provider. How you doing today?
Honestly?
Sometimes I feel like I am falling down.
Have an agenda because you know Super Destroyer is such a personal project to you. I kind of just want to get your take on it and hear why, you know, the hows and whys of why you do it,
yeah,
like how it came together, your goals for the new album as opposed to the last one. Yeah, I just want to get your take on stuff.
Yeah, that sounds great. I definitely am willing to talk about that. I don't know if you have a place you'd like for me to start.
Well, why don't you start with how you became Super Destroyer?
Yeah, so I've been making music basically since I graduated high school. So I'm in my 30s. It's been a while. When I first started, I wasn't a Super Destroyer. I kind of was just making a lot of electronic music. My whole life, I'd grown up really only knowing how to play the piano. And so when I started out, it was actually all synth-based, all like VSTs and MIDI and stuff like that with, you know, MIDI drums and all that stuff. But it's kind of how I got my start in music in general.
I fast forward about 10 years. I decided I wanted to do something with guitars. I'd been playing for a little bit. I'd always grown up in the punk and hardcore scene and wanted to give it a shot. And so I'd had a former friend pass away back in like 2017. And it made me realize, like, if I want to do this, I should just do it. And so I jumped in and decided, you know, make a project that I actually anticipated or intended to put out. And it started as demos mostly. I was trying to convince my friends at the time to join like a band or to start a band with me. So it was like, hey, I'm making these demos. People seem to kind of think it's fun. You should like jump in. I think we could, you know, have fun with this. And like my friends were interested, but we were all just kind of working on our own stuff by that point. I was in grad school. Some of my friends had, you know, started pretty serious jobs. And so it kind of just turned into this weird solo project where I finally just decided to kind of do whatever I felt like.
Okay. So yeah, so Super Destroyer is just kind of the umbrella for whatever your output is, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you hear me still?
Yeah, I can still hear you.
I hate
trying to see, I lost you.
Kind of what?
I think I lost you. You can hear me?
I can still hear you.
Okay, give me one.
Feel like I am wandering your house with you right now. I'm just hearing every footstep and floorboard creak.
So, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. So the problem is, my smartwatch decided to take over the Bluetooth.
You heard that.
And now I can't get my headphones to reconnect. So I'm like, I feel like
let's just roll with it. Yeah. Let's just roll with it. I can hear you. Yeah.
This is phone speakers now, so I guess we're just going to go with that. Again, I'm sorry. This is like the worst luck I've ever had with this stuff in my life. I'm very sorry about this. But anyway, okay.
Oh, cool.
This should not get interrupted, though. Nothing's connected anymore. I'm going to even turn off my Bluetooth so nothing can get connected. And now we should be safe. Okay.
Cool.
Good. I hope that you can edit.
I feel like I'm gonna do bare minimum of editing for this one. Just I'm not gonna lie, I kind of like all the audio switches. So
well, you know, it kind of fits with, I guess it does fit with the whole Lonely Ghost and the Super Destroyer, to be honest with you. So you know what, I'm fine with it.
Right. Yeah, you're kind of a glitch pop, you know, electro punk project. So you know, all these sort of crunchy sort of mishaps are just kind of part of the flavor, right?
Yeah, well, I kind of roll with it sometimes, you know. I've been fortunate enough to finally be able to upgrade some stuff, but before this, like before Goon, about halfway through Goon, I finally got a new computer. Before that, I was using this laptop that would just like drop audio all the time, so sometimes it would take me like 150 tries to get like a 5-second piece of a song recorded. Like, it was crazy. So yeah, it is still on brand, I think.
But. Yeah. Okay. So, is part of your aesthetic owed to the fact that you're recording under less than ideal circumstances, or recording with unreliable equipment?
Not anymore. I've definitely changed it up. Goon and Soaked in Synth, the equipment was pretty good quality, honestly. However, I'm kind of like, you know, I'm like very much like not a guy with like a lot of money or anything. So I buy used instruments. I wait too long to replace computers until they won't work for me, you know, kind of that kind of thing. So my synth did break during Soaked in Synth. I had a Korg M50 that finally quit working. So I had to finish the album on a micro Korg. And then I had an old laptop before that obviously when I started recording on it was okay. But you know, as you move through the years, stuff just doesn't work as well as it used to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of my aesthetic came from less so maybe not working with the best equipment, but more so just not having a lot of money and trying to learn how to do a lot of things myself and kind of really embracing that process. So mm-hmm. I think like as I've done this longer, I'm hoping that like I've gotten better at it. I feel like I've learned how to record better. You know, I've learned how to kind of maybe produce it better, make cleaner takes, better playing, stuff like that I think have helped. But yeah, I think the aesthetic just kind of comes from me like really embracing DIY in general. So some of it could be like faulty equipment or just like bad luck. Some of it is just, some of it's intentional. It's kind of just a little bit of everything. I'm one of those people who kind of like to roll with a little bit of the unpredictable sorts of aspects of creation.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of, you know, I mean, the history of DIY music and indie music, working with equipment that's basically broken, that shouldn't be, you know, that is maybe like either too junky or too cheap to achieve like general recording, you live up to general recording standards of the time, or you know, trying to do as much as possible with as little resources as possible. I mean, that is the whole history of indie rock, honestly, up until maybe like the 2000s.
Yeah, and you know, we are keeping that tradition going strong at Lonely Ghost Records and Super Destroyer as well. But you know, I think like there's a reason for it too, which is like music has become more democratized over time. It's become more accessible to a lot more people, and you don't necessarily have to have the best of everything. And in some ways, I think by having those limitations of maybe quality or like even what you could do or what you think you can do, really inspires more creativity, because it's more about like what you're doing. And, I don't know. I find like sometimes that makes better music than if you can just jump to the thing that's supposed to actually do what you want it to do.
Right. I mean, do you feel like if you, at this point, if you had better equipment, that your sound would change that much though? Like, do you feel like...
Oh, no, like, yeah. I've upgraded, like I said, I bought a music production computer, basically, like designed to do that. And I still sound like this, I guess. So no, I kind of like the lo-fi sound. I don't really like hyper-produced music in general. I came out of the punk scene in the early 2000s. You know, I was really into street punk, really into hardcore. I eventually got into more like screamo and more like pop punk and stuff too, for like shows and stuff I'd go to. But I've always really liked kind of that harsher sound. I think there's a lot of energy in it. And so for me, I think Super Destroyer is a project that kind of lends itself well to some extra noise. Like Joyce Manor's probably one of my favorite bands. And I always tend to gravitate towards their like earlier albums where it was fuzzier, because there's just something about that sound that gives it energy. You know, like when you hear like the remasters and stuff or the remixed versions, it's just the energy's gone or the charm is gone. I do think that there's something really unique, or maybe there's a lot of personality in that in its own right. And I think people sometimes treat that sort of aspect of music as something that you should try to get rid of. And I feel like you should embrace it. So, you know, I don't know. I think it's more fun sometimes to just have a little extra noise in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes things more interesting. Right. And I feel like once it becomes like a part of somebody's sound too, even if they can get a higher quality recording, or they, like you said, they remaster some of their old songs, like they just don't have the same charm, right? Like it just feels like something's missing.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of ambient music as well, and like down-tempo electronic music. And I think the same thing that makes me attracted to those sorts of genres are what make me like the sort of more lo-fi sound as well, which is there's a lot of texture in there. There's a lot of extra like ambiance that's kind of contributing to the mood and kind of the vibe of the song, especially if you know it's there and you plan around, right? Like the only time I think noise sounds really bad is when it kind of overpowers what you're supposed to be paying attention to, or if you didn't do it intentionally, if it's there, but it's something that you didn't try to plan for. And so it just kind of becomes this obstruction or this sort of interruption in a song. But outside of that, you know, I think there's a lot of bands that people probably wouldn't like if they sounded
cool. Yeah, I mean, there were quite a few bands who I feel like were kind of cool and who I really liked the mid-2000s, who as soon as they started getting some money and, you know, could pay for decent recordings, like it just became apparent that they just did not have the talent or the or the ability to create records that, you know, weren't just marred by limitations of the recordings. And I would name them, but I feel like those, like it would be pretty controversial if I did.
So, you know, no point in really putting that out there, but you know, I get it. Like, and I definitely have bands that I can think of too, where it's the thing that gave them their spark was almost the fact that they were limited, you know, They kind of had to work with what they had. And then once they're given the opportunity to do a lot, it's almost like too many options to make it. You can't keep it reined in or something. You can't see the cohesion, I guess.
Right, right. I'm curious about when you made the pivot to becoming a fan of ambient music and, you know, like lo-fi electronic music, because I also am not coming to, you know, my love of music, my enthusiasm for music doesn't come from a place where I'm steeped in that type of thing. Like you, I initially got into music because I loved punk, because I liked, you know, just fast, loud music. And as I've gotten older, I found my way into other things. And even in my mid-20s, I never would have imagined myself really getting into like some deep sort of gritty like breakcore, which is totally something I love now. So I want to hear your story.
So I actually was always a little bit of an eclectic music listener. When I was like 14 or so, I started getting into 90s hip hop and modern rap too, but that was just like popular music at the time. I feel like it's not that weird by then to have been into rap in the 2000s, but like I got really into 90s hip hop, especially because I loved the production and the sampling. And so honestly, I got into it pretty young. Like I would say by the time I was 18 or 19, by the time I started college, I was pretty into like ambient and down tempo, but just kind of surface level still. By about 2010, 2011, I was pretty into it. So were my friends. I kind of was glad that I hit into that scene around the same time where I feel like it was kind of doing the most unique and fun stuff at the time. Like, it's not that there's not still a lot of really cool stuff happening, but it just had a very unique sound to that era that kind of went away. It was a little bit more ambient, a little bit lower production value, I guess. It wasn't really trying to move towards the house sound that a lot of those artists ended up moving into, which was a little bit probably more lucrative. You could produce for more people. They were making things that were a little bit more meditative. And I really enjoyed that. And I kind of saw it as almost like electronic emo because it was all emotion. Like, there's no words in a lot of these songs. They're just like maybe a sample of a single piece of someone's vocal or something like that. But like a lot of it's just like the sound of it, like how it makes you feel because of the fact it's like in a minor key or something. It's just, yeah, it just was a very emotive music. So I got hooked pretty early on. Honestly, I feel like my age maybe brought me back around to some heavier music. So I don't know.
Okay. So you were always kind of into that stuff. You just maybe weren't in a scene that embraced it.
Yeah. And like, to be fair, I don't know that I ever totally jumped into any other scene that I participated in totally that wasn't just kind of like punk or punk adjacent, you know, like I never got super into ambient shows and stuff. I like to move around at shows. Like, that's why I go. Like, I'm not a watch the band kind of person. I'm more of a like be in the pit kind of person. I like the energy. If I just want to listen, I'll stay home. Not that I think there's like, not that I think it's dumb to go to a show and just enjoy it and watch. But for me personally, it's about the like jumping around, you know? So I never had like a super large interest in seeing a lot of those still like ambient artists. I was more interested in catching like rap acts or like more high energy electronic stuff though. But I felt most at home in the punk scene. And I feel like that's kind of where I always stuck closest to.
And you like that sort of the participatory part of a punk show where it's okay if you move around, it's okay if you're like interacting with other people, you're not necessarily disturbing them, and it's even okay if you jump up on stage and commandeer the mic.
Yeah, you know, I never tried to commandeer anything, but I would do some stage diving, you know. But but yeah, I do, you know. Obviously, I'm not somebody who thinks that crowd killing and all that kind of stuff is cool. I feel like there was some of that, especially in the hardcore scene, that was like not always the most fun. But yeah, I just like the energy. I like the catharsis. I like the movement. You know, you have fun with all these people who are there because they like the same music as you, and you're all just like smiling and jumping around, and it's fun, you know, and you kind of do bond with people. Like, you start going to shows. Like, I was up in Michigan. I lived in Michigan for almost a decade before I moved back to Ohio. And when I moved up there, you know, I didn't really know anybody. And then after I graduated, all my friends moved away from college. And so then I just kind of didn't know anybody. And I just kept going to shows, and I would just see the same people at like a few shows a week or whatever. And, you know, you become friends. And I always thought that was pretty cool too, that it was always kind of a, at least back then, a pretty welcoming and friendly scene. Since COVID hit, you know, I kind of avoided shows for a long time. And I don't know, it kind of fell out of my routine and I got really busy. So I'm trying to find time to make it back to more of them right now, to be honest with you.
How does it make you feel to be, you know, making music that doesn't necessarily, you know, flow into a scene right now, that it seems like it's mostly online You're mostly connecting with people online. Doesn't seem like you're performing a lot live. What does it feel like to come from, you know, a punk scene where you're like hanging out with people, making friends, bouncing around, to being by yourself, making music, and then, you know, having to put it out there and solicit a response, you know, remotely?
Yeah. So, I mean, in some ways, the community feels the same, at least with Lonely Ghost. Like, prior to Lonely Ghost, I will say it, kind of where the name came from. You literally feel like invisible and there's just like nobody around if you're making something that didn't fit. But like with where we are now, we kind of have our own little artist community. Like, everybody shares songs back and forth. We collaborate with each other. We give each other feedback, stuff like that. So we have that, which is really nice. But then like the scene kind of that has developed around the label and these artists who are kind of making out of the box music has really allowed for it to open up and maybe find some more room for people like me who are making things that maybe aren't easily definable or don't easily fit into the traditional sort of scenes that, you know, the music that I'm borrowing from would fit into. So, you know, like in some ways, yeah, it's kind of weird to be like on the internet, but like in the same way, I feel like that's where a lot of younger people are in general. Like Gen Z does spend a lot of their time online. A lot of these smaller DIY labels seem to kind of be similar to Lonely Ghost in that regard of just like, it's mostly based on the internet or on Twitter, or, you know, at least through social media and things like that. And there's benefits and obviously there's downsides to it. Like, you know, the lack of physical closeness sucks and can be a bit of a challenge. And it's hard to kind of like bring people together maybe the way that you would like to in a physical space. But you are able to kind of bring in people from a lot of different regions of the country or even the world who maybe have different perspectives, different influences, and you can work with them very easily and you can collaborate them with them very easily. And so you are able to, I feel like, maybe expand like musical influences or the way that you're thinking about music or how you are kind of participating in music. So I think for people who like to play eclectic music like myself, I think the internet sort of model works almost better than probably it would if it was just local. But, you know, again, it does suck that like I have friends all over the country who I've like don't see.
Okay. Right. But you, yeah, like you said, most labels are kind of operating that way right now. And it seems like everybody's a Lonely Ghost. You're the only one who's comping to it right now.
Maybe.
You're the only one who admits it.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of that now. You know, it's just the modern life, I think. You know, the same things that make life convenient also make it convenient to be more alone. You know, you don't need community as much sometimes, or not in the same way. And so a lot of people, I think, are looking for community around things like maybe a very particular interest in music or something, these kind of more niche interests that they hold than maybe they used to because they can find them. And that's kind of replacing maybe the more generalized notions of community where you're bringing in people with maybe a lot less in common on a micro level, but maybe more in common on a geographic or locational.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. That would seem to really favor people who have a very clear idea of what they're looking for and a clear sort of sense of taste. But at the same time, labels like yours are able to flourish. And there seems to be like a lot of interest in very eclectic music. The stuff that you're doing, I would say what MS Paint is doing is just kind of out of left field. I never would have predicted hardcore techno working with hardcore punk in quite the way that they're doing it.
You know,
there's oh my God, I love that band. There's Fire Tools out of Chicago. Angel Markaloid. Oh, you haven't heard of Fire Tools?
I have not.
Very interesting artists. I think they would be up your alley. They're on Haosu Mountain. And Angel formed something akin to a fusion jazz mix of new age elements with some, you know, death metal and black metal mixed in. And it's really beautiful, but also very challenging.
That sounds sweet.
Yeah, it's super. Also, cool. I looked up
there, pulled them up. But yeah, there's also a band called The Mall that MS Paint.
Love The Mall.
Yeah, I went on tour with, and they're kind of like that too. Just like a really unique mix of, again, almost more like techno even with like punk or like house with punk. It's very neat. But yeah, it's really weird to kind of. So I started working on this album like a couple of years ago, and at the time, you know, I genuinely was like, nobody's gonna fucking lose this. I did not predict or expect to see anybody else making like full blown, just like synth only kind of punk adjacent music, but I was very excited to see it.
Yeah. So there's a real appetite for the stuff that you're doing out there. I think it is filling a niche that, you know, just nobody could have predicted. Nobody really knew was there. People who, you know, have broad interest in music and, you know, are excited to hear something that they haven't heard before. And yeah, like I said, it seems like right now the internet really seems to favor self-selecting groups of music enthusiasts, but yet there's also room for you. There's room for Haosu Mountain, Endless Paint, The Mall, things of that nature. I don't know. I think it's really exciting what you're doing as a label. And yeah.
I just meant it's exciting to see like eclectic tastes converge in like, I guess, the alternative rock spaces. Like, to me, you know, growing up, when I did, genre was a lot more important because things were much more siloed. And so like punk kids hung out with punk kids and stuff like that. But like I said, in high school, me and my friends all listened to a lot of stuff. And so did a lot of the other we knew. And I feel like that kind of this generation, my generation, was the first one to really just start branching out because we had the internet and you could just go and find music from any genre and you could steal it for free. Mm-hmm. And so it didn't matter. Like, you didn't have to worry like about spending $10 and not liking it. You could just try it out. And like I did, and you know, I think a lot of the people I knew did. And then, you know, you kind of see that trickle down to then it goes to streaming where it's even easier. And so I think like eclectic taste is probably the norm at this point. Like, I think most people do like a lot of different genres of music and different types of music. And it only makes sense that eventually people are going to try to make songs using all those different influences. And, you know, like what I thought about when we started Lonely Ghost was like, all of my favorite bands are bands that nobody else sounds like. If you like them, you have to listen to them. There's not really somebody else that's going to scratch that itch. And so, you know, that's kind of my vision for Lonely Ghost too, of like, if you really make something uniquely your own, nobody can really be you. Like, we have Hey, I Love You and Cheem on the same label. And in theory, they should be pretty similar, but they sound nothing alike. Super Destroyer also, I mean, you know, I've made some pretty out there stuff myself. Technically, we're all would be like probably in the same genre if you want to call it one, but like, none of us sound alike. And I think that's what this kind of new wave of music is affording, where you could have a people who are all technically in the same genre, but they don't sound at all like each other. And, you know, obviously there will be people who do that better than others. And I think like we're kind of on the front edge of seeing that happening. You're seeing it start to trickle into more popular rock acts. You're starting to see it trickle into more pop music where people are starting to do a lot more of that. You know, hyper pop obviously is a thing. I mean, there's a lot of genre blending going on, and I just think that's what's going to keep happening. I just think it makes sense.
Yeah. At the same time, I feel like what you're doing is a little less forced than hyper pop. I feel like hyper pop you can slot into the same type of dubstep as like what Skrillex was doing, which Skrillex was just kind of like, oh, this is just crazy, guys. Look at this. Look at how crazy it is. And, you know, yeah, what you're doing is, you know, a little bit more of an honest kind of synthesis of just the things that you like and finding common elements that kind of fit them all together and make a whole picture.
I think that's the goal of everybody, you know, on Lonely Ghost for sure. It seems like, you know, like a band like Cheem is just the only reason it works is because they're not faking. Mm-hmm. Like, that's real. They genuinely love the music that they're drawing from, and they want to make something that sounds cool, borrowing from it, you know. And like, I feel like that's the difference between like Cheem and maybe somebody else who would try to use nu metal, is it's pretty hard to incorporate nu metal. So, you know, it's that, I think it's the genuine aspect of their music that makes you like it, or at least that's what made me like it.
No, and I love Cheem. I think they're geniuses, honestly.
Me too.
They're so cool. Yeah,
they're, I love them. But you know, so like, I think like with the label in general though, you know, I'm glad to hear you say that, I guess, because, you know, you don't really ever get to perceive the things that you do outside of yourself. These projects that I work on, whether it's Super Destroyer or Lonely Ghost Records or whatever, like, you know, you only can see it from your own perspective. And from my own perspective, the way that I kind of move through the world is like, I'm not shit. You know, all of this is just some bullshit I'm doing. And like, I don't think about it beyond that. You know, like, I don't really get to see how, whether it works for other people or not. I just noticed that some people like some of our bands, and that makes me happy, you know, and I try to like keep it real. Otherwise, that's about it. So I'm glad that, like, you know, we don't come off as like somebody trying to be like unique for the sake of it, or I don't know, gimmicky.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, yeah, you're definitely not gimmicky. I would, that is not how I would describe you at all. Did you want to talk a little bit about your upcoming release, Soaked in Synth, .zip?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. I don't know totally where to start. Did you have something in mind that maybe you'd like for me to?
Yeah, well, does this one have a narrative? Because Goon kind of had a narrative of like a family vacation kind of going wrong. I compared it a little bit to Zen Arcade, you know, in my review of it, which I still stand by. Yeah, I'm wondering if Soaked in Synth has a similar theme or a similar sort of through line.
It does. So it's a little bit more straightforward, but, you know, it's like the idea of just like intrusive thoughts or just like negative energy in the form of like the cartoon demon kind of coming to visit Super Destroyer. And it's just kind of working through the various aspects of like these bad thoughts. So the whole thing is kind of taking place via the cartoon demon is coming from downstairs to come visit. And then, you know, that leads to like a phone call, which is the rest of it. And it's kind of like this sort of, I guess, existential to a certain extent conversation that's supposed to be being had with an implied person on the other end of the line. So maybe not quite a full-blown story, but certainly a concept.
Mm-hmm. And what is the cartoon demon like representing to you?
Yeah, so, you know, I've always struggled with how to situate some of the more challenging aspects of life. I had a pretty rough childhood and stuff like that. I struggled with, you know, things like depression, stuff like that growing up well into adulthood. And so, like, you know, I feel like sometimes you learn to push those things down, or you feel like you've really learned how to maybe keep them under control, keep them contained. And then once in a while, they kind of manifest in this weird way where they just come up and they poke you in the brain and they take over. And you kind of feel like you're being mentally hijacked by something that you don't even want to entertain. And for whatever reason, the more, you know, you try to ignore it, the worse it gets. So you kind of just have to work through it. And so that's kind of the idea for me. The notion of a cartoon demon is just, you know, the last album was pretty dark. And I feel like this album, through the course of recording this, I started this in 2021, you know, on the heels of kind of the worst of COVID. And it was towards the end of recording Goon. And I started with a spontaneous fit of joy. And I kind of was starting to work through and try to find a little bit more peace in my own life. And so part of that was trying to remind myself that, like, while you can't actually control reality, like you can't make life not suck just because you don't want it to suck, but like you are in control of more than maybe sometimes you allow yourself to believe. Like you can control the way you frame things. You can control how big some problems are in your life. Some things, obviously, you can't, you know, survival needs are different, but like more like the socio-emotional stuff, I feel like stress even, stuff like that, you just try to learn how to do better with it, or like maybe not make it such a big deal. And so this cartoon demon is kind of the way of like defanging what genuinely can be, you know, very serious and very concerning thoughts. But, you know, if you don't make them into something important in your life, they don't necessarily become that way either, is what I've learned. You just kind of allow yourself to let go of it. So that's kind of the cartoon demon, and like kind of me talking to myself, and I guess you as the listener, and trying to like figure that out myself throughout this album.
Okay. So the demon can be overcome. They're like a two-dimensional creation where you as like a person are three-dimensional. You're real. You have agency. You can overcome this thing. Yeah.
Right. Like it's, you know, yeah, exactly. It really, that's a good way of saying it.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I do like the, idea that this whole album is also a phone call too. That's all one conversation, and how it all kind of flows together. Yeah. Did you intend that?
Like, yeah.
This so concept pretty early kind of evolve. Okay. Yeah.
Actually, I cut the album. So a couple of the songs I had before and the way that I had structured it, it was more so even that, like it was much more clearly an ongoing phone call, but I cut some of that out because I like this order better, and because I like some of these songs better, and I did not want to include some of the other songs. I felt like they just weren't a good fit for the album. So, yeah, that was pretty much always the plan. I recorded A Spontaneous Fit of Joy and Cartoon Demon on the same day in the span of 3 hours back to back. And it was pretty much Spontaneous Fit of Joy is called that because it quite literally is freestyle. Every single element of that song was basically 1 to 2 takes freestyle. And then Cartoon Demon was a little bit more purposeful. And then obviously you go back and you know, fix it up a little bit. But like, I knew pretty early on that I wanted it to be this idea of like this cartoon demon, this conversation, more stream of consciousness, maybe a little bit than some of the other stuff I do. So yeah, I think the idea was there pretty early.
Okay, cool. And I like the idea that that you're on the phone with somebody else and they're kind of like anchoring you too. Like they're kind of pulling you back into reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely what it's supposed to be. And I'm kind of glad you picked up on that because I wanted it to feel a little bit like you're drifting like further into your own thoughts and then kind of being pulled back out of them. You know, like I wanted to kind of mirror that idea of like being in your own head versus kind of like reevaluating with a little bit more distance.
Yeah, being locked inside your own head can be scary. And it can take a lot to get you out. So I do like that. I do like that motive that there's like somebody kind of listening in and they're like, hey, no, go back here.
Yeah.
You know, get out of there. You can do it.
So Gregory from Old Phone, originally I was going to have them do some like more ad lib type stuff that I was going to drop throughout the album. But then I just spent so much time on it and I really liked the way it sounded and I was afraid it was going to sound clunky and I kind of thought it had a nice flow. But that was actually one of my original plans because they had already given me a few things that I was going to use. But, you know, I think it's better without it in a way. Maybe it leaves a little bit more room for interpretation. So,
yeah, yeah. Like maybe people can like imagine whoever they want as being on the other line rather than, you know, old phone specifically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, that's very cool. And that's going to be out in June, right?
Yeah, June 30th. And so it's a pretty big difference from some of the other stuff I've made. There are literally no guitars on it. Even the stuff that sounds like guitar is a synthesizer that's not a guitar voice. All of them are like legit synth voices that I put distortion on and stuff. But I really wanted to just go back to like the full synth sort of sound that I started with when I first started making music and see what I could make now. And it's kind of weird. So like, you know, if people have listened to my other album, I mean, obviously you've heard this one. I don't know that it's totally unfamiliar, but it's definitely a little bit different as well from maybe what you'd expect.
Yeah. I mean, it still feels like Super Destroyer, but yeah, it is different. I would say even the cover art is kind of a departure for you or a new direction for you. Is that actually your face on the cover? So that's been melted or okay. That's actually you.
Yeah, I was just walking up the steps and I was like, hey, take a picture of me with a synth underneath my armpit real quick. I feel like this could be a cool album cover. So Ashley, my girlfriend, did that. And then she posed for a picture too for the single cover. And that's kind of, I don't know. I knew I wanted to do like a melting face. I felt like me melting was very appropriate for this album, like felt spot on. So like I wanted to try the idea out and it actually worked. So I was very excited. Because I wasn't sure whether it would look cool or just like really lame, you know? And maybe it does look lame. I think it looks cool, but, you know, other people might disagree.
That looks, yeah. No, I think that's perfect, honestly. Yeah. That you are not only the person making this album about defeating the cartoon demon, but also the cartoon demon.
Yeah. So originally I was going to Photoshop myself stabbing my melting self in the back. Like two versions of the melting guy stabbing himself. But I was just like, too much going on here. I kind of like the more liminal space vibe. So I kind of just split the difference and decided to just go with a melting singular character there. But you never know. Like if I do like a little like partner type companion piece to this, maybe I'll put a second person on the stairs stabbing it to indicate it's the second one, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I kind of like the idea of the demon just sort of walking in and greeting you and being like, hey, pal, like it's your friend or something. Yeah.
That's kind of what I thought it would look like, too. That's why I kind of was like, yeah, this works, you know, and like walking up the steps and it goes with the theme of like, so like there's emotion at your basement is the second one, which is supposed to kind of be like him coming up the steps, you know. And so like I kind of had this whole idea going and I think it all, interestingly enough, influenced itself because the picture of me walking up the steps is what then made me make There's Emotion at Your Basement, which is the second song on the album. because I realized like, oh, I should make a song that's kind of like, what if somebody's like walking up the steps and like pounding on the door to get out of the basement or whatever. And so it's been like a really interesting process even for me, because I'm used to like riffing off of myself, but I usually don't take so long to do stuff. I had took a lot of breaks. I kind of like revisited things a lot. And so I just had a lot of thoughts that I kind of got to work through as I did it. And I think it made it kind of cohesive, which I think is fun.
Cool. It's very cool. Yeah. I'm stoked to see what other people have to say about it, because I really like it. I think it's really a good album.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I actually need to go. So I'm gonna turn off the recording now. But Super Destroyer, this has been a really cool conversation. And like I said, I'm really looking forward to people hearing your new album, Soaked in Synth.zip, and it's gonna be out on Lonely Ghost Records.